Hello and welcome to Transition Talks, The Road to Glasgow. This is our podcast where we examine all the issues that are facing us in Scotland and the UK leading up to COP26 in November in Glasgow this year. Big year for Scotland, big year for the UK, lots of activity around the transition to net zero. And today we are delighted to have Councillor Jenny Lang join us for our conversation about Aberdeen. Hello, Jenny.
Hi, Stephen. Delighted to be here today. Can't wait.
Super. Now, Jenny, you're the co-leader of the council, so you've got a really great view of Aberdeen's strategy and how it's intending to change to achieve net zero. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been the co-leader since 2017, and I was the leader of the council before that. So I think I've been at the forefront definitely of Aberdeen City Council's journey around hydrogen, and we're obviously keen to make sure that we can be promoting that both not just citywide but region-wide as well.
Excellent. And also joining us today, we have OGTC's own resident expert when it comes to all things hydrogen and energy transition, Luca Karadi. Hi, Luca.
Hello. Hello, Jenny. Hello, Stephen.
Hi. Luca, I'm conscious that you take quite a broad view mm-hmm. of what needs to happen to actually make an energy transition work. And we have a city in Aberdeen that's absolutely taking a lead in that space, given what's been going on when it comes to hydrogen over the last few years. So I'm going to ask Jenny if you could explain to us the overall vision for Aberdeen when it comes to net zero transition and the use of hydrogen in particular.
Okay, Stephen. Well, I think as a city, we've always been known as the oil and gas capital of Europe, in my lifetime anyway, over the last 50 years. And I think when we're looking at that, the climate change aspects that we're all having to wrestle with currently, and that energy transition piece, I think people understand that cities will have to be at the forefront of that, the journey that we're all on, and at the forefront of bringing forward strategies and policies that will help us achieve the stretching targets set by national government. And I think Aberdeen, because of its history with oil and gas, needs to be at the forefront of that. So as a local authority, we've been looking at hydrogen actually since back in 2015 is when we first brought forward our hydrogen strategy. And at that time, we were looking at it for two reasons. Firstly, around that reducing emissions, because we realised that, that is what we've all got to be striving for in the years ahead. But also about the diversification of our economy, because I think what we've learned over the last 50 years is that we have become dominated within our local economy by oil and gas. Now, that has brought us great economic benefit over recent years. But what we need to make sure that we're doing with the downturn that we've seen in oil and gas, we needed to make sure that we were strengthening other sectors within the economy. And, we've looked at how we can do that through our city region deal and other investments that we've made. But that renewable energy piece, because of the expertise, the technical knowledge we've built up, the skills base that we have here, and indeed the supply chain that supported oil and gas over recent decades, it made sense to us that part of that diversification centred around energy transition and renewable energy in particular. So it was about us trying to diversify the economy, retain jobs here, the skills that we built up, attract new investment, and make sure that we continue to lead the way in energy moving forward. And hydrogen we saw as an opportunity for us to do that. I think we got in very early on as a local authority. I remember, holding conferences here where we brought people from all over the world to see the investment that was being made. And we managed to tap into some European investment funding in relation to our first project, which was around that transportation aspect and the hydrogen buses that we brought to the city. But it also allowed us to invest in some infrastructure. So refueling stations, two in the city currently. And we've carried that on very much as a local authority over the subsequent years, because we see, and I think the rest of the world is now seeing as well, when you know, even in the UK, we're seeing the UK and Scottish governments coming forward with their own strategies around hydrogen. And, you know, estimates of it being worth about $25 billion a year to the Scottish economy by 2045. So it's important that Aberdeen was at the forefront of that. And that's really led us to bring forward that strategy and indeed the investment that we've made as a local authority over the last 6 or 7 years. And we want to build on that moving forward.
Super. I mean, I guess being resident in Aberdeen, it's very easy to see physical evidence of the strategy because we can see the buses.
I saw one today.
Yeah. And not just the buses, there are other council fleet vehicles that have been converted into hydrogen usage as well. So that's a really encouraging development. Is the plan for the entire council fleet eventually to become either hydrogen or EV or something else? What's the thinking there?
Yes, it would be, Stephen, as we move forward, and you're quite right, we've made a significant investment up to now in the last two budgets in particular around those green initiatives. And so, you know, you mentioned there about vans and trucks and also around the, you know, we want to expand from the mobility aspects that we've invested in to date, but also into that heating aspect, because we see that that's an area where we can create demand, which will help us to reduce the cost of hydrogen, which will ultimately make it that attractive inward investment piece for the private sector as well. But we're trying to lead the way within our own organisation. So you've mentioned there about the strategies that we've brought forward in relation to our fleet. We have... just actually earlier last month, agreed a climate change plan for the council itself. And that very much is around that investment in our assets and the operations that we have on the council to try and make sure that we are reducing our carbon emissions. And hydrogen is at the forefront of those plans, as you would imagine, given the investment that we've made to date and the expertise that we're building up within the city as a result of, you know, the work that we've done over the last few years.
So there's a lot to unpack there, Jenny. I think apart from physically seeing the fleet of council vehicles and the buses, most citizens in Aberdeen would probably also be aware that the new exhibition centre is powered by hydrogen. But then I think that's probably as far as it would go in terms of public awareness. And it's really interesting to hear you talk about using hydrogen for heating. Is there a specific project or partnership with a company that's developing that concept for us?
Well, what we're trying to do, Stephen, is, as I mentioned there, it's to build up that hydrogen economy within the city. So very much part of that is the work we're doing around creating a hydrogen hub. And that's where we intend to work with both industry and government partners, because we have managed to secure funding from both governments in relation to that project, which we were obviously delighted about. But it's about us trying to commercialise hydrogen, is build up that demand and indeed reduce the cost, which then would mean the, you know, the rollout of hydrogen can take place not just within Aberdeen, but we can hopefully build on that moving forward, where we become a producer, distributor and exporter of hydrogen in the decades to come. But the hydrogen hub we see as being our opportunity to push forward, particularly around that, providing hydrogen heat for both residential and commercial developments. So we've been testing the water around that at the moment. So going out and seeing if there's interest within the market to come in on a joint venture with us. And you probably won't be surprised to learn that there has been a good deal of interest around that, because people are now becoming switched on to the opportunities that hydrogen can bring. As I say, not just to us in the Northeast, but the UK and indeed globally. So we're looking forward to building on those plans as we move forward.
And Luca, bringing you in at this point as well, because you'll have oversight of some of the other projects that are going on outside of Aberdeen that are quite relevant to the projects Jenny's sort of explaining for us here. So, for example, in Fife, there's a housing and heating project going on, yes, in Fife right now, isn't there? Can you tell us a little bit more about what's happening outside Aberdeen?
There are plenty of hydrogen projects popping up all over the world. I think 2 years ago, when we were talking about hydrogen, the question was, why are you talking about hydrogen? Now it's all about what are we doing about hydrogen? I think the public awareness in the industry and beyond has increased a lot. And in the rest of the UK, there are a number of projects. There are all projects around the industrial clusters, one of which is in Scotland, which is, of course, the Grangemouth St. Fergus corridor, which goes across Aberdeen. And it's how do we decarbonize industry without taking it offshore, keeping the job, keeping the production here, but eliminating the emissions. And the way to do that is a combination of hydrogen and carbon capture. And the same happens in Teesside and in other clusters. And then there are a number of projects that like the one you mentioned, which is particularly relevant because it's about that system or end-to-end. So it is heating 100 houses with hydrogen, but that hydrogen is produced with offshore wind nearby and the transport. So it's testing the system. And I think the concept of the system is very, very important. And is what Jenny said before, at city level, is where do we get the hydrogen? How do we store it? What do we use it for? Because that's the way you can start creating a hydrogen economy, as opposed to isolated test or isolated project. There's no point in having a hydrogen bus or a car fleet if you don't know where the hydrogen is coming from and you don't know that the hydrogen is clean, or low carbon. And there's no point in doing projects on heating without the certainty that the supply is going to come somewhere. On the other hand, you don't want to produce hydrogen without knowing there is a market. And this is what at the moment is, I wouldn't say slowing down, but hydrogen is picking up. But the key challenge that everybody's facing is, okay, shall I build an electrolyzer, shall I build a hydrogen production facility, where is my market? Or shall I invest in hydrogen boilers for heating? Where is the hydrogen coming from? Is it coming from? So that certainty or confidence in the system is a key point. And it's so great to see cities stepping into it because, cities are a big, important role in playing in making that system happen because you have, I wouldn't say control, but you can influence. You can influence both generation, transport, utilization, and starting with the public administration, with the local council, starting with the buses. It's better to invest in buses and show that they work rather than trying to convince people to buy a hydrogen car. Show that it works. Make sure that the whole system works. And that is a strong message. Most of the people live in cities. So cities are extremely important to fight on climate change.
So I'd quite like to just do a wee thought experiment then, given that we have this climate change strategy for the council and we've got a strategy for hydrogen in Aberdeen. 5-10 years from now, look, if we had to sort of time travel to the future, what would be reasonable for us to expect to see in Aberdeen as a net zero city from where we are now? What big changes could we anticipate?
I think we will see the decarbonization of transport in cities. So all the vehicles in traveling around cities will be either electric or hydrogen. And there will be a lot of electric, I think, especially for private use, and a lot of hydrogen for heavy duty or return to base fleet. So where the infrastructure of the capillarity of recharging infrastructure is less of a challenge because these vehicles return to base basically and can recharge there on a frequent basis. From a heating perspective, we'll see a lot of new houses with heat pumps and hydrogen where that is not possible. You know, so I don't think hydrogen is the panacea. So that's probably an important point. I don't think we see everything is on hydrogen. Hydrogen has two elements that are extremely useful. One is the versatility. It is a vector. So, you know, and it's a vector that can store. That's the second element. While electricity is a vector, but it's hard to store at the moment in big quantity and on a seasonal level. Hydrogen, you can. And then the other element for Aberdeen, if you're talking about Aberdeen, is the oil and gas industry. And the oil and gas industry transition into a hydrogen economy is kind of a natural and progressive direction. So I think in 10 years, we'll still have oil and gas. So we still have a lot of work in that area. By any means, not all the cars will be non-petrol and diesel. We'll still some of them, but you know, many, many, many less. But a lot of the supply chain will have migrated and will be at the forefront of hydrogen technology. And I hope also on the forefront of hydrogen technology innovation, so that you can export then that IP and technology to other places. And as I, you know, as Jenny said before, is that element of not only solving the decarbonization of the city, is also the potential for export, both of hydrogen itself and of the technology associated with it.
Super, thanks, Luca. And Jenny, what's your perspective now that you've traveled far into the future, looking back, looking at the climate change strategy and the hydrogen strategy, what do you hope for when you look back in over the next 10 years?
Well, I mean, I think Luca's right that because of the work that's already going in around that transportation aspect, I think we'll have moved forward quite significantly with that. And it is about that critical mass aspect. So the work that we've done, you know, I've talked a lot about Aberdeen and I always do that because I like to promote us at every turn. But I think it is important that to note that we're working in partnership with other cities within Scotland as well around that hydrogen agenda, because that is what will create the infrastructure which will allow us to, you know, really make that switch into transportation being either electric or hydrogen in the, you know, the short to medium term. And I think it's also about that active travel bit as well, and changing people's behavioural, changing their behaviours around that modal shift as well. So the investment in public transport, not just buses, but in trains and ferries and other things around hydrogen, is going to be important moving forward as well, particularly if we're trying to get those targets that we need. I think Luca's quite right. We are, as I mentioned, trying to bring forward those heating projects through the hydrogen hub and the other work that we're doing in Aberdeen. And we're looking, you know, we've got an extensive house building programme, council house building programme, where we're looking to utilise new technologies in that, but also to encourage the private sector to do likewise. So I would hope that we would be further down the route with those types of issues as well. And as Luca's mentioned, that oil and gas industry and the decarbonisation of that is going to be key to us moving forward, not just in the Northeast, but to reach our targets nationally as well. But I think what I would like to see is, and you know, I've mentioned before that both governments have woken up to hydrogen. I think we're seeing them coming forward with strategies and plans. We're seeing that investment, but we are behind the curve, I think, when you look at some of the other countries and the way they are moving forward with hydrogen. You know, we see that in the international work that we do within the city as well. So it's vitally important that at a national level, we're seeing government making that both the investment and bringing forward incentives, I think, for the private sector to make that investment to try and de-risk some of the challenges around hydrogen, so that we can get that public-private sector partnership, which will be required if we, you know, really want to achieve the aims that we've set ourselves, both regionally and nationally.
That leads very neatly onto a topic I wanted to kind of raise with you, Jenny, is you mentioned oil and gas sector, the fact that Aberdeen has a reputation for being the oil capital of Europe. And oil and gas, our economy based on oil and gas, is not going to go away overnight. but there's been a very particular private-public partnership that was announced just recently between Aberdeen City and BP, with BP's Climate Cities team looking to partner with Aberdeen to assist it in its move to become a net zero city. You got a lot of stick for that. There was a lot of press about whether or not the oil and gas industry should be listened to on this subject. So I think I'd be really interested to hear your perspective on that and what that partnership is all about.
Okay, well, I mean, I mentioned in my opening remarks about the fact that Aberdeen would, you know, we needed to be making that switch, lowering our emissions, really being at the forefront of energy transition if national and international targets were to be met. And that is equally important of the oil and gas sector. And I really think that many of the companies operating within that sector have shown that they want to play their part. They are stepping forward. They're looking at technologies that would allow them to reduce their carbon emissions, will help to play their part in that energy transition journey. And BP are no different from anybody else in that respect. And in actual fact, you know, I think they have shown by their actions that they are committed to that climate change agenda. And that's why we wanted to make sure that we were working with them. Now, we've had a long and productive relationship with BP, you know, because of the oil and gas sector, and we felt that we could build on that partnership. So we were delighted when their regional and cities team, approached Aberdeen City Council and asked if we wanted to be part of the work that they were doing around, that with cities. Now, Aberdeen was the second city alongside Houston that was announced, and we have great links with Houston as well over the years and indeed through the World Energy Cities Partnership. So it made sense to us that we would look to develop that partnership. So it's a memorandum of understanding really that we've developed. It's a four-year framework agreement, and it's about us cooperating to bring forward energy transition projects. And I mentioned about the City Council having our own organisational plans around that. And that's why we want to work with BP, because we think that they've got the technical knowledge, they've got the expertise and the skills that can help us to achieve some of the energy transition goals that we've set ourselves both within that plan and in the city as a whole. We bring expertise to the table as well, I have to say, because local authorities, as you know, operate in many different areas and provide a variety of different services and things. So I think we've got expertise in transport and property, housing, the social objectives that people have, particularly around that just transition piece. So it makes sense that we can complement each other by bringing different components to the table. But hopefully it will allow us to really deliver on the priorities that we've got, both as an organisation and as a city. And we intend to work together for the mutual interest and benefit of us as a local authority, a place, and indeed BP as a company who wants to play their part in that. But I mean, that's what it is. It's a memorandum of understanding. It's them helping us to work up these proposals. If we get to a stage, I mentioned there about the hydrogen hub work that we're bringing forward, we obviously will bring that to the wider audience. We will make, we've put out and asked people to note interest in working with us on these projects, and that's how we will shape things up moving forward. So it's not a closed shop with BP by any means, but we just see it as an opportunity for us to tap into their expertise. And I think they are reaping benefits from stuff that we've got within the council that will help them to achieve some of the goals that they've set themselves as a company as well. And so on that basis, I'm very comfortable with that, because I think they will bring great benefits to us as an organisation and the city as a whole.
Well, I guess you could call it a bit of an accelerant when it comes to achieving the net zero ambition. Hopefully we'll move things forward at pace. I think Aberdeen City you do bring a lot to the table for BP as well, not least data. When you look at the live data of a living organism that is a city, that needs to be modelled and understood in order to make decisions around achieving net zero, that's quite significant. And I think we're seeing projects like that elsewhere. Luca, is that not right?
Yeah, correct, Steve. I think the major shift we're seeing in the oil and gas industry is the shift towards becoming integrated energy companies from oil and gas companies. But that means also getting closer to the customers, and customer being the individuals, but the cities and, you know, the users of that energy, as opposed of producing a commodity like oil and gas and selling to a market without a customer. So that is what is changing in very rapidly and will become a key theme in the next 5 to 10 years and beyond. And is, you know, the lack of a predominant source of energy. So we're moving from the era of fossil fuel to an era of an energy mix of different vectors and different sources, from solar to wind, hydrogen or electricity as a vectors. And companies like BP, but others, international as well, are diversifying. And, you know, the last round of offshore wind licenses sees many oil and gas players taking part in it. And that means producing electricity. And that means not abandoning completely oil and gas all of a sudden, because that's the transition that needs to happen. But of course, that transition is happening, you know, and these companies now are getting more and more closer to their final customers. And that's where partnerships like this are very, very useful, because they can understand the customer better and understand the strategic direction. So it is a win-win relationship in a way, because on the other hand, they bring all this expertise in project management, in big infrastructural projects, in making that happen. And it's crucial that we involve and engage the oil and gas industry, and mostly it is, in the transition, as opposed of ignoring them, as sometimes is easy to be tempted to. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's right. And BP's analysis that cities drive transition is 100% correct in our view. And I think, Jenny, yeah, you said the same in your opening remarks. You also mentioned the Scottish Cities Alliance, working with other Scottish cities to share knowledge and experience and maybe collaborate on projects. That's something that I think that the average citizen in this part of the world might not know an awful lot about, but it's a really interesting piece of work. And, you know, I'd be keen to hear a little bit more about that from you, if you could share something, Jenny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've been involved with Scottish Cities Alliance for a number of years now. And I think, I mean, it's like everything else. You know, we often, when we sit in our little bubble, we think, you know, we're the centre of everything. But in actual fact, when you look at Scotland and indeed the UK as a whole, we're quite, you know, we're a small entity when we look at ourselves globally. So it makes sense to me that you pool your resource and you pool your expertise and make sure that you're pulling together strategies and plans that will help shape Scotland and the UK to be at the, you know, most advantageous position it possibly can be moving forward. And particularly economically, it makes sense around that hydrogen piece that we are making sure that, you know, each of the cities are playing their part in, you know, bringing forward projects that will develop the technology, will develop the demand that needs to be created. And that's why hydrogen is featuring quite heavily within the work of Scottish Cities Alliance. But we're also looking at the other aspects of the smarter cities. So it's the projects that we've rolled out. You know, we've done LED lighting within the city, which is helping us to reduce our carbon emissions, cut our costs, those types of things. And what's happened through the smarter cities is we have sort of smaller test projects happening in the cities, which allow you to look at the success of those and then roll those out if it is successful, and you can reap the benefits of the economies of scale because the cities are working together. Now, I mean, the cities in Scotland are quite diverse. So, there'll be ones like Aberdeen, very urbanised, very, based on, single sector economies. And then you get into the, you know, Inverness and the Highlands, which is obviously much broader rural aspects. So there are things that are common to us all within Scottish Cities Alliance, and there are things that will be unique to the cities. And I suppose the what you have to strive for is that you tap into the things that are helpful to you as a city, and then obviously further and promote the aspects that that make you unique from the others. And I think the way Scottish Cities Alliance is set up, it allows us to do that. There's flexibility within it. And it's also a place where we can engage directly with government at both levels, both Scottish and UK levels. And we can have that direct access to them so they can hear directly the issues, the opportunities and challenges that cities have, and how we can help them achieve their goals, as well as them helping to support us in our vision as well.
And one thing that you all share, every city in not just Scotland, but throughout the UK shares, is bringing its citizenship along with them when it makes this transition to a net zero outcome. One of the key things I've always been very concerned about is how do we convince people, non-ordinary working people, that it's a benefit? You know, it's, will it be cheaper? Will it be more expensive? Will their health improve? I think all of these are issues that are huge for cities to address. And I know that that's an issue that's close to your heart as well, Jenny.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think we're under any misapprehension in realizing that if we are to achieve the aims that we've all set ourselves and the goals that have been laid down by government, we need to have that behavioural change. People will have to look at doing things in a different way than we've always been used to. And, you know, sometimes that can be difficult because people like familiarity. They like to, you know, they might have a vision of a more pedestrianised city centre, a cleaner, greener environment. But then they also have a reliance on using their car to get to places, to enjoy the greenery and various other things. So from our perspective, it's trying to show people that by making that change, the benefits will be greater, not just for them personally, but for the city and the region and the country as a whole. And so I suppose, if I'm honest, I think it will take a little bit of carrot and stick. And we will maybe have to see government bringing in certain legislation, maybe around those low emission zones within cities. And we may have to see them, you know, bringing in other legislation around trying to encourage active travel more that I mentioned earlier. But we do have to make sure that when we have that transition, that it is a just transition. Because often when we make switches to new technologies, the costs are higher. And so those who are probably most at risk already, those living in fuel poverty, are unable to make that switch because the costs are too high. So that's why I think in Aberdeen, when we've brought forward things, you know, I'm thinking about our energy from waste plant, which is obviously about us cutting, you know, trying to deal with our waste in a more environmentally friendly way. We've done a lot in recycling, but there's always that bit left. The energy from waste plant was all about how could we utilise the energy coming from that to provide cheaper fuel for local residents and businesses. And that's really what determined our decision to site it nearest to one of our areas of regeneration, because it was we wanted to utilise that energy coming off. But I suppose that behavioural change, I think the COVID situation that we've gone through has been very difficult for everybody over the last year. But one thing it has shown us is when we have to, we can make the change quickly. And we can do it, you know, in a flexible way. And some of the things that have happened as a result of COVID actually are showing benefits for people's health and well-being. You know, we have reduced traffic emissions and things like that. You know, people not having to move about, commute in the same way that they had before. And what we need to do is we need to tap into the opportunities that have been provided by COVID. And we need to convince people that sometimes change isn't all bad. it can actually bring us great benefits. So I think although COVID has been challenging and we would all have preferred not to have been living with that for the last year, I think it does show us that when we need to make that change, we can do as and I think the public, if we get the messaging right, I think the public will get behind it and make sure that the recovery that we have is a green recovery. We have that opportunity now to make it a green recovery and a just transition, more so than we probably did a year ago.
I think there's a lot we can learn from how other European cities have taken their citizenship rate with them as well. I'm thinking in particular of examples like Copenhagen in Denmark. About 10 years ago, they started to reduce the amount of car parking spaces year on year. So they had parking reform as a major environmental tool, a lever they were pulling. And then a couple of years ago in 2019, they increased parking charges for the remaining spaces by up to 100%. So little things like that can be very controversial. But I think given the nature of the change that we have to move towards, it's I think all measures and levers should be on the table.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're quite right. And you won't be surprised to learn that through the work that we do, with whether it's Scottish Cities Alliance, we're interested in what other cities have done and how they've brought it in, how they've got that behavioural change, what challenges they've met. We do it through the World Energy Cities Partnership, which we have the presidency of currently. And indeed, when we shaped up our own city centre master plan, we brought experts in from different parts of Europe to give us advice around, you know, how they had moved their citizens forward. And it's safe to say there's a bit of carrot and stick. And, you know, we've done certain things like that in Aberdeen as well, whether it's around parking charges, whether it's around when we see new office developments being built, reducing the amount of car parking that's involved with that. But I suppose it's also about making sure that we are providing the infrastructure that allows that active travel to take place. So, you know, whether it's cycle lanes, whether it's creating more pedestrian-friendly areas within our city centre, all of these types of things, we have to make investment in those those types of infrastructure, which will encourage people to maybe have a more active way of travelling around the city. Now, that can be easier said than done with reducing budgets and councils and things like that as well. And also in Aberdeen, we've struggled, I think, because we probably don't have the public transport network that perhaps some other cities benefit from. And that can be a challenge, particularly because our workforce quite often come from outlying areas and are not in the city centre itself. But again, policies around getting more people living and working in the city also helps you to achieve those things because people aren't having to commute in the same ways. So, you know, we've incentivized residential accommodation in the city by removing some of the developer contributions that are involved with that, and also making, you know, grants available for people to, you know, do up buildings, transfer them into residential properties. So all of those types of things, I think they're either, you know, they're in the gift of local authorities or indeed national governments to bring forward those types of incentives that will help us to get that move forward. But we are always keen in Aberdeen to have an outward look at what's happening both in Europe and wider world to see where we can tap into where people have done it well and how they've achieved that, because I think there's no point in reinventing the wheel. We might as well use the benefit of other people's experiences as well. But we need the public to get on board as well and help us to make that change, I think.
Absolutely. Luca, you've just bought an electric bike. What's your perspective and all of these levers? I'm sure you've got something interesting to say around this.
Oh yeah, it is extremely fascinating trying to look into the future of cities, right? Because there are opposing forces at work. I think one is, the change into active travel. We are not actually actively traveling that much. We haven't done so for the past year because of the pandemic and the various phases of lockdown. And definitely we travel less, but do we travel less because we can't, not because we won't? And there is that sense of it's a temporary thing, looking forward to finish. So, you know, Jen is right. How do we build back better? You know, how do we make that new habit becoming a positive change? And it is more of a system, again, perspective. There's no point in trying to ask people to stop the car and travel by bike or walk, but everything else is the same. You have to be at work at the same time as before. You have to go to the bank or to the council office for everything you have to do. You know, all the systems change to make it easier to do things in a different way. And that's the second push, in a way, the second trend, which is a decentralization. You know, the whole concept of the 20-minute neighborhood, where everything you need is within 20 minutes to walk or cycle from where you need, that goes against the city with a center of activities and you know, and living quarters or accommodation places around it. Is a distributed city, but that's not the city we have at the moment, and not many cities in Europe are that way. So in a way, we're doing the shopping online, so we don't need to go much more into the city to buy the shops, with all the consequences we've seen in these days. But that's about the new paradigm. So is the city going to be more concentrated because that allows you know, the requalification of the shops in the high street and the office buildings into accommodation, so there's more people living there, they don't need a car, they can walk to everywhere? Or is the city going to be much more decentralized because we can do everything online and work from home? It's hard to say which one will prevail and where the cities will go. I think it will be different solutions for different parts of the world, depending on also on the topography, you know, and the physical characteristics of the city. I bought an electric bike and it's great, but that's more for fun. But yes, I plan to use it going back to work, because of that, you know, will remove the fact of arriving at work sweaty from the ride. You know, I can sweat on my way back and I can be fresh when I come there because it is electric. But still, Aberdeen is a city of up and down, you know, and Copenhagen, you mentioned before, is a kind of a flat city. And it's easier to go around on a bicycle in Copenhagen than it is in Aberdeen.
Well, they have the infrastructure all sorted. I can attest to that for a fact. Conscious of time, I would like to end the discussion with coming back to the whole concept of Aberdeen as the oil capital of Europe. We are obviously transitioning in terms of our energy, our behaviours, our structures within the city to achieve net zero. But I tell you what really irks me sometimes. When I go on Google and I type in the most innovative cities in Europe, and you get a top 10 list, and it's usually capital cities. So it's usually like London will be number one. Then you'll have places like Berlin and Paris. But Stockholm, Copenhagen, Amsterdam, they all feature as well. I would love Aberdeen to be on such a list when it comes to clean tech innovation. And I think rather than being the oil capital of Europe, we certainly aspire to be the energy capital of Europe and get our positioning sorted out so that we can attract some of these super exciting technology developers in the future. That's what we're trying to do at OGTC through TechX. And I just wanted your perspective on that, Jenny, to give you the last word to talk about your vision for Aberdeen as an energy capital rather than the oil capital per se.
Yeah, I mean, I think we started off the conversation when I, you know, was speaking about why we'd gone into hydrogen and what was the motivation for us. And the diversification of the economy was, you know, was really important, because I want to see Aberdeen being a prosperous place in the decades to come, just as it has been over the last 50 years. And I see that in order to achieve that, we have to make that energy transition. We have to tap into the, you know, the skills, the technology that we've built up over the years. And we need to anchor the supply chain that supported oil and gas here. Because as you've mentioned, if you've got that ability, because I think there's great flexibility within the skills that we've got to move into that energy transition piece. And that's why, you know, as part of the City Region deal, OGTC was the major project within that, because we actually saw that we've got the innovation here, we've got the ability and the skills to tap, you know, to maximize you know, that. And we're seeing OGTC and others within the city, you know, universities, you know, the great strength that we've got with academia, with the private sector, with the public sector all working together. And it's about us making sure that we're also developing that skills base for the future. And that's where the just transition piece comes in as well. Because what happened in Aberdeen before was everybody didn't benefit from that economic buoyancy. There were people that were left out of it. And, you know, they don't have the same, you know, fondness for oil and gas because they didn't benefit in the same way locally from it. And this time around, we need to make sure that that just transition piece is at the heart of what we're doing. And that's about ensuring that we are creating the pathways for our young people to come into that new technology, to be part of that new industry. And so we're anchoring our young people here. And that's what will attract that inward investment, because if we're an attractive place to live and work, and we can secure young people who are the innovators of the future, then business, I believe, will come here and invest here. And that's why, as a local authority, it's not just being around that energy transition piece. It's about us building the place of Aberdeen. So, you know, we were talking about city centre and all of that, that cultural offering, making sure that we're investing in, you know, whether it's the art gallery, the music hall, TECA, whether it's investing in our events so that people can see that Aberdeen's a happening, vibrant place. We have a wonderful, you know, physical environment where we are. You know, we've got beaches, we are close to wonderful countryside. If we can create an environment where people want to come to live, work and visit in the future, that is what will create the prosperity for Aberdeen. And I see energy transition being at the heart of that, because we have strengths in it. You must build on your strengths, not just throw everything out the window, because we need to move away from the old types of energy that we've used in the past. Let's use and utilise the skills we've built to create a prosperous Aberdeen moving forward. And if we do work together, public, private sector together, I think we can achieve great prosperity for Aberdeen in the Northeast. And as a local authority, we certainly want to play our part in that, but we need others to get on board as well.
Well, that's passionate, articulate. It just summed it all up. So, and what a great way to finish this podcast. So, Councillor Jenny Lang, co-leader of the Aberdeen City Council, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us about the city's vision going forward. I think lots of listeners who are based around Aberdeen in the northeast of Scotland will really take heart from what you said today. So thank you so much. And Luca, thank you for your input and perspectives. It's been tremendous.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
It's an exciting time in our industry, so please take it all in, get involved. So listen, subscribe, and if you have any questions, get in touch with us via our website at ogtc.com. You can also follow us on our social media channels, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, for all the latest updates.